This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Friday afternoon, October 30th, 2020. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart, sitting in for Cisco Cotto today. McDonald's is bringing back a cult favorite to restaurants across the country for the first time in 8 years. Cover that in our next segment. Right now, reports on consumer sentiment and personal spending lead today's data. We're joined by Gus Fauché, chief economist, PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh. Gus, thanks for joining us to lend a little more insight on those two items that were brought up in the business report just a couple of seconds ago. Let's talk about personal income, which is interesting, especially given the number of people who have lost their jobs since the beginning of March.
That's right. But we saw personal income rise a little less than 1% in September from August. And that's because we had more people working. So although we had a huge loss in jobs in the spring, we have been adding jobs steadily since then. And so we saw good job gains in September. And with more people working, we saw personal income go up. But it's still way down from April when everybody got those stimulus checks. And so I am concerned that as we continue to move on and as the unemployment rate remains high, that we could see consumers start to pull back on their spending if we don't get another stimulus package.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, how precarious is that progress right now? And, you know, how is there a hard time limit on when lawmakers have to come up with another stimulus, whether it's in the lame duck session after next week or January? You know, when could potentially that progress teeter off a cliff?
Well, I mean, my concern is the holiday season. For many retailers, that's their most important time of the year. If we don't get some sort of package that at least provides aid to those people who have been out of work since the pandemic started, that we could see a big drop in holiday spending, and that would be a big problem for the overall economy and for retailers in particular. So sooner is I'd much rather have sooner rather than later, and I would much rather have a package that's too big than too little. So I think that Congress should be very aggressive with this.
And when we talk about a package that's too big compared to too little, I mean, the CARES Act was $2.2 trillion. Democrats have been talking about, you know, $3, $4, $5 trillion, depending on what happens next week. You know, what types of stimulative measures would you like to see in the next bill, whether it's aid to businesses, another round of checks, infrastructure programs? You know, what would really get things moving?
I think in the near term, there are three key features, one of which is aid to households, whether that's checks or whether that's extra unemployment insurance benefits. The second thing is additional aid to small and medium-sized businesses. You just had that report on about restaurant sales in Illinois, and I think that a lot of small and medium-sized businesses are feeling very pressured, and additional aid would be a help there. And then also aid to state and local governments. They need to balance their budgets. If they don't get aid, their revenues are way down. And we could see big spending and job cuts from state and local governments. And I know that's of particular concern in Illinois, but it's true throughout the country that, you know, in all types of states that revenues are down. And I am concerned that cuts there could really slow the recovery.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Gus Fauché, chief economist, PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Coming up, fans of the McRib can begin whetting their appetites.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's viewed by some as a fast food cult favorite, the McRib sandwich at McDonald's, and it's Cult status is so well known far and wide that it was even the basis of a plot of a Simpsons episode several years ago. Let's get the latest now on the large-scale rollout from Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, thanks for joining us this afternoon. And there's no fooling. The McRib does have a cult following, and you could see them expressing their joy on social media this morning.
Rob, you're 1,000% correct. This is one of the only cult favorites from fast food. The McRib actually started back in 1981. It was not successful, which is why it was taken off the menu. The only place in the world that it is a permanent fixture in McDonald's is at their restaurants in Germany and in Luxembourg. Other than that, you know, we just have to keep our fingers crossed. So it's coming back December 2nd for the first time in 8 years. But what's interesting about this story is let's keep in mind that, you know, our meatpacking facilities, whether it be beef, poultry, or pork, still are only about 30 to 40% at capacity of production. So it's coming at a very strange time for me, and I would expect that we're going to see the McRib be a little higher priced than it normally has been. And also, there's always been a lot of controversy because it's not a rib. Basically, it's restructured boneless pork patties that are shaped like a rack of ribs. It contains barbecue sauce, onions, pickles, obviously on a bun. And actually, the process was first developed by the U.S. Army in order to deliver low-cost meat products to the troops in the field. So it's really pork shoulder meat versus, you know, a rib sandwich.
And yet it has this passionate nationwide following. And it must be, though, the result of savvy marketing and locking it up for 8 or 9 years, because when the McRib comes back into circulation on December 2nd, it'll be its first time on the menu since 2012.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, you know, you mentioned The Simpsons. It was also featured in the 1994 Flintstones movie that came out.
Yes, with yeah. John Goodman and Rick Moranis.
Exactly. So it was there. It's also had four farewell tours. You know, we talk about rock stars having farewell tours, but this is brilliant marketing. This is the fourth, or there has been four. We'll probably have a fifth farewell tour when it goes off the menu. And it's always sponsored by the Boneless Pig Farmers Association of America, which is, you know, not a real association at all. But, you know, we continue to see people loving this sandwich. And, you know, the question's going to be, what's the price going to be this year? What's going to be the impact of it? I mean, McDonald's is saying that because of the pandemic, people need to have some fun. They need to have some good, nourishing food, and that's why they're bringing it back.
Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com in Los Angeles, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Coming up next, Under Armour thriving during the pandemic.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Shares of apparel maker Under Armour rise on a better-than-expected quarterly report. Let's get an update from Camilla Januszewski, equity analyst, CFRA Research, based in Rockville, Maryland. Camilla, welcome to the Noon Business Hour. It seems like 2020 is the year for athleisure, the year when the American business person was only seen from the waist up. So you could say bye-bye to not only that belt, but pants with a button.
Hey, thanks for having me. Absolutely.
And, you know, how has Under Armour found a way to thrive in this setting, not just for workout clothes, but also for clothes for lounging around?
Yeah, well, Under Armour is a great name to point out, because actually the biggest misstep this company has made is that they haven't been able to evolve with consumer tastes. And by that, I mean, they continue to solely position themselves as a performance and team sports brand, and they've actually largely missed out on the athleisure trend, which competitors like Nike, which we have a strong buy on, were very early to jump on.
Well, it seems like the first out of the trench when it came to athleisure was Lululemon. Under Armour, as you said, is starting to play catch up. How is their, you know, performance wear business, though? How is that keeping up with gym closures, perhaps people moving their workouts outside, or buying a Peloton or some other type of advanced piece of fitness equipment to bring the gym experience home?
Yeah, well, to tie it to the highlights of the report, a disappointment in the report today was that North America, their sales are down 5%. And on the call, the company had highlighted that they plan to return that segment to growth by 2022. But we've seen steep losses in that geographic segment sequentially for the past 3 years in terms of sales. And that really ties down to this company has not wanted to evolve with the consumer and not rule out athleisure like Nike, like Lululemon have done.
So what's your recommendation on Under Armour stock?
So we have a sell rating on Under Armour, and we reiterated that rating this morning. We think that Under Armour's growth narrative is broken. First and foremost, they haven't evolved with consumer tastes. But also, we don't think that they're going to be able to meet the Investor Day targets they rolled out during Investor Day in 2018, specifically in regards to gross margin and then also with direct-to-consumer. We saw that their inventories this quarter were a complete mess. They were up 17%. Remember, their revenues were flat. And second quarter, the inventories are up 24%. And ultimately, we think this is going to impede the progress that they're trying to make in terms of they want to elevate this premium perception of the brand.
And the Under Armour symbol is UAA, and among some of the moves that it's also making, it is selling the MyFitnessPal workout platform to a private equity company for $345 million. Camilla Januszewski, equity analyst, CFRA Research in Rockville, Maryland. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Still ahead, in Entrepreneur Friday, using local sources to supply produce and meat to the Midwest.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart, sitting in Francisco Coto, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The candidates for president focused their final weekend of campaigning on battleground states. Mayor Lightfoot shares her plans to keep city streets safe in the aftermath of the election. In Entrepreneur Friday, we meet the founder of a Midwest company specializing in locally sourced produce, fresh salads, and meal kits. The pandemic appears to be generating more cases of worker burnout. Business, the markets are down. The Dow is down 341 points. The NASDAQ down 303. The S&P 500 is down 57. AccuWeather says sunshine, a few clouds this afternoon, still chilly, and a high of 45. Right now we have 41 degrees at O'Hare and Midway, 40 at the lakefront. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, it's now a sprint to the finish for the candidates for president. Speaking to reporters in Wilmington, Delaware, former Vice President Joe Biden was asked what he'll be visiting Minnesota today, even though Democrats won it 4 years ago.
No, I'm not concerned. We're going to be in Iowa. We're going to be in Wisconsin. So I thought I'd stop in Minnesota. I don't take anything for granted. We're going to work for every single vote up to the last minute.
White House Director of Strategic Communications Alyssa Farah is helping President Trump's message.
His closing message is going to be the economic message. Coming out of the pandemic, who's the best person positioned to rebuild this economy? So you're going to hear a lot of that. These other issues matter, but our closing message is we're going to defeat the virus. We're going to rebuild the economy.
The president will also be in Minnesota today. Both Biden and Mr. Trump are scheduled to make stops in Wisconsin during the weekend. Mayor Lightfoot has unveiled a security plan for possible unrest following the election.
I know that emotions are already high. There's a lot of apprehension that might happen next Tuesday. But please, I call upon each of you to channel your emotions into peaceful, productive means of expression. We should be a model for the nation and how we take care of our business.
The mayor's plan includes increasing police patrols across the city while using garbage trucks and other heavy city vehicles to block certain strategic neighborhood corridors. WBM News Time, 12:32. The Noon Business Hour continues, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are in the red today. We're joined by Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, National Securities, based in New York. Art, thanks for joining us today. It seems like, with the exception of yesterday, this is just continuing a trend that's been going on all week.
Yeah, it's been a bad 2 weeks. As a matter of fact, as we look at it, and what's interesting is October in election years tend to have a rough first 2 weeks and a better second 2 weeks, and we reversed that this year. So October actually had a pretty good first 2 weeks, and we are definitely sliding over the last 2 weeks. And clearly, the path of the virus is the number one catalyst. We're concerned about increased caseloads, increased hospitalizations, and how much that might slow the economy down, especially when we look across the pond and see the shutdowns that we're seeing in France and Germany and what might happen here in the United States. So I think the market's biggest concern is that it's, you know, are we peaking here, or is this going to, this spike going to continue, and how much economic damage does that do?
And let's just say, you know, the election is over and done with next week, and lawmakers decide to take up stimulus again during the lame duck session, even though that seems rather unlikely. Would the appearance of another stimulus measure, whether it be $1.8 trillion or $2 trillion or $3 trillion between now and December 31st, despite increasing COVID cases, would that ease the markets and lead investors and business owners to believe that if maybe there's not a plan, but they'll be taken care of?
Yeah, you know, I think that certainly would be a positive. We spent most of the summer and into the month of September expecting some fiscal stimulus, and it feels like the door has been shut on that, certainly until the other side of the election. The Senate doesn't even come back until the 9th of November. But I would tell you this, getting things done in the lame duck session is very difficult, and it's largely dependent on the outcome of the election. So if, in fact, you have a change in administration or a change in the balance of Congress, you likely won't see anything in terms of the next round of stimulus until after the inauguration. So that's not likely to be a positive catalyst next week. And certainly we've had a pretty solid earnings season, which hasn't really been a positive catalyst either. So I think that what that tells us is the number one thing on investors' minds right now is how much this the increased COVID cases across the country are going to affect the economy, and when do we expect that to slow down?
In the world of tech, the biggies reported after the bell yesterday: Apple, Twitter, Facebook, Amazon. Their stock all down today. What's the what are some of the highlights of their earnings reports from yesterday?
You know, it's interesting. Apple has had an interesting quarter because, A, everyone's been waiting for the 5G phone. It wasn't incorporated much in the last quarter. Typically, they roll out all of their new products in September. They just rolled out the iPad, waited till October to roll out the new iPhone. They've only got two of the new four new 12s introduced already. So I think they delayed their own quarterly revenues, and therefore their iPhone revenues came in a little bit light. Everything else is firing on all cylinders for Apple, and I certainly think that their new iPhone 12 is going to be a game changer for the company. And certainly at the same time, their services revenues have increased as a percentage of the overall revenues for eight quarters in a row, and I think that's very important. So with Apple, I'm not as concerned about that. Twitter seems to have misfired here, and it's interesting that their monetization of their monthly average users went down, and Facebook saw similar ad spend concerns. So those are different stories that are more structurally focused on the individual companies. You know, at the same time, what's interesting to me is, you know, all four of those companies had solid reports. Twitter's probably the weakest of the four, but all the companies had priced in some pretty good news over the course of the year to date. You know, when you look at some of these names up between 40 and 70% year to date coming into the reports.
And then lastly, let's talk about Exxon, third straight quarter of losses, revenue down nearly 30%. Is their dividend, is that sustainable in this environment?
Their dividend would fall into the category of what we consider a red flag. And by that, when you see a dividend, especially of a company as large as Exxon, as high as it is, you should say to yourself it's not sustainable, and don't buy the company for that. So, for example, you know, a year ago, if you looked at their dividend, you know, while it was high, it was half as high. And if you had bought that then, you've lost about 10 years worth of dividends and what you've lost in capital appreciation. So to me, I think you want to look at dividends that are reasonable. And right now, I'd say that's an unreasonably high dividend that likely needs to get cut.
And what's troubling Exxon in 2020? Is it still the price war from earlier this year and this a drop in demand?
It's the latter. It's a drop in demand globally. So Exxon's a fully integrated global player. The global demand for petrochemicals is down with the global economy. Typically, that'll pick up again with the pickup in global economic activity. But the problem is that there's a large cohort of investors that just don't want to invest in fossil fuels anymore, regardless of what the supply demand dynamic looks like. So they've lost a strong cohort that would prefer to invest away from fossil fuels. So therefore, when you think about that, even when they improve, their multiples will likely be lower on a go-forward basis.
Thanks for joining us. Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, National Securities, based in New York.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and the focus this afternoon is on staying local with produce, meat, and meal kits. We welcome in Patrick Fitzgerald, creator and co-owner of Fresh Midwest, based in Kenosha. Patrick, thank you for joining us on the program today. What was the journey that brought you and your brother into not only the meal delivery business, but also the locally source produce business?
Rob, good to be with you. Thank you for having me. So we first saw an opportunity in the marketplace with the closing down of the Peapod location here in the Chicago area. And being in the produce business all my life, we talked to a few people that were formerly were at Peapod and came up with kind of occupying that space again.
And the hook here is that everything comes from around the Chicago area. So how are we able to kind of scout out the locations for, you know, locally sourced produce as part of these meal kits?
So from growing up in South Water Market and dealing with a lot of these farmers in 40 years, 50 years now, we've had some really solid relationships with these growers, and we just have leveraged that opportunity to start this new one and deliver it straight to the consumer.
Is there a hard and fast rule on what constitutes locally grown? Is it within 2 hours of Chicago, 3 hours, just the Midwest?
Yeah. Yeah, so we look at it as anything within 250 miles. So our farmers are all around this entire Midwest.
And you know, how did making this particular business model work inside, you know, a marketplace of people who might be used to farmers markets or CSAs, you know, community supported agriculture, or just you know, getting produce kits from farms every month? You know, how did you try to make this work inside expectations of that particular consumer market?
So we have a high level of expectations that we have held on ourselves. Our business has always been with some of the best restaurants and chefs in the city of Chicago. So expectations were already there to begin with. We've sourced out a lot of great people that grow some exceptional product. And if it's not organic, a lot of it's pesticide-free, a lot of it's clean ingredients that go into the soil. We have an incredible staff here at Fresh Midwest that is our food safety program, which spent a lot of time working with the farmers to make sure that they are up to spec with their water, their irrigation water, and farms. But we're very proud of all of our farmers, and especially with what they're going through now. Makes it that much more valuable in this partnership.
And this is part of we're in launch period right now, phase one.
Yeah.
It sounds like only available from Kenosha through Lincoln Park and then the entire Chicagoland area early next year. What are you learning so far from this smaller geographical footprint?
So we start with family and friends in the North Shore area because that's where I'm from. So we kind of branched out from there, but we've had a great reception on this home delivery service. The state-of-the-art building that we have here, the food controls that go over it, going away from getting away from the middleman to our chain of cold with cooler and keeping it has been well-received through the entire public.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Patrick Fitzgerald, creator and co-owner of Fresh Midwest, based in Kenosha, launching now but expanding early next year. Good luck. They serve the Chicago area. Check out their website, freshmidwest.com. Still to come, working from home doesn't mean workers are on easy street.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A survey by the staffing firm Robert Half finds the number of people experiencing worker burnout is up significantly from a year ago. Let's learn more from Michelle Reisdorf, jobs expert, Robert Half, based in Chicago. Michelle, welcome to the program. And we're doing this segment in honor of Sunday morning when we return to standard time. We get that extra hour of sleep, and studies suggest workers really need that, especially after the year we've had.
Yes, for sure. Thank you for having me.
Now, when you talk about worker burnout, I mean, even though a lot of people are still working from home, that doesn't mean, you know, you're just you're knocking the stress of the commute out of your life. If you're working from home, chances are your kids are learning from home, and you have to navigate your own work life through your child's academic life, and that could be more stressful than dealing with a 3-car pileup on the Kennedy.
Yeah, for sure. The pandemic has definitely made 2020 one of our most stressful years ever. And, you know, even for those people cutting out that commute, what we're finding is they're probably logging in earlier and staying on later and working what would be normally their commute time.
And the other thing, too, is even if you manage to come up with a good workflow between, you know, your working from home experience, perhaps your spouse's working from home experience, and then the children's, you know, their learning from home experience, there have been so many job cuts. You know, there's always, you feel like, you know, sometimes, you know, every day you cheat the hangman, and that level of stress could also lead to burnout.
Yes, absolutely. Companies are definitely working with leaner staff levels right now, and, you know, even decreased resources. And so that definitely makes it much stressful for those employees that are carrying the workload, which is definitely increasing kind of that burnout feeling and decreased morale.
Now, what about the future of the workplace, though? I mean, obviously, this pandemic is going to end. If your kids are learning from home, eventually they will return to their classrooms, and life will go on in some way similar to the way it was in 2019. But this has got to change the workplace in terms of, you know, making working from home a realistic option for a lot of people in the future. It's no longer something that is conceptual. It's a thing that everyone has experienced.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of our clients are relooking at, you know, what 2021 and, you know, after the pandemic brings. You know, a lot of companies have successfully managed to work remote. But you lose a lot, you know, by not having your teams together and in the office. And so I think companies are really trying to figure out what does that future look like, even ourselves included, you know, and hiring, et cetera, you know, how to make that all work.
And then very quickly, I would imagine also for a lot of adults who have been working it from home for 7 months, once they get the green light to return to the office, they will leave in almost cartoon-like fashion. You just see the cloud of dust behind them as they run to the train.
You know, it's been 50-50. You know, you definitely still have people concerned about returning too soon. But yes, definitely people that need that people interaction and work better in an office situation that are definitely, you know, running to make that leap right away. So, yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Michelle Reisdorf, jobs expert, Robert Half, based in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's show, just go to the stream, skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the radio.com app.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.